Well, today's gospel is often referred to as the flight into Egypt, and it makes it sound as though Mary, Joseph, and Jesus took an easy jet plane from Bethlehem Airport to Cairo. But of course, this is the first century, and they walked all the way. How far is it from Bethlehem to Egypt, do you think? Well, it's about 260 miles as the crow flies. The journey that they took is often depicted on Christmas cards something like this. This is a painting by Girardet, and it's rather sweet sort of picture of Mary and baby Jesus on the donkey and Joseph walking behind. And it doesn't actually look too bad, you know, a bit of a long journey, but they seem okay. But you have to remember, of course, that it's not long since Mary gave birth, and probably they didn't have much money with them, and then there was a risk of being attacked and robbed, and they were fleeing the terrible events or at the heart of this story about Herod, that's Herod the Great, killing all the boys under two in Bethlehem. And you can imagine how they felt fleeing that terrible thing. I'll say a bit more about that in a minute. And so once you really think about it, this journey, this flight into Egypt, must have been a frightening and arduous ordeal. Most likely they walked on something called the Via Maris, and that's the way of the sea. It's actually a trade route between Egypt and Israel and other northern countries. As you can see, those arrows showing Bethlehem into Egypt, mostly along the coast and then back again right up to Nazareth. Nazareth is another 60 miles to the north from Bethlehem. So a huge, huge journey for people on the road, just with a donkey and otherwise walking. So it must have taken at least a month to walk there and another month to walk back, because those distances are as the crow flies, so they probably had a much longer roundabout trip to get along the different roads. Well, Egypt, there is a sort of tradition that Joseph and Mary and Jesus rested on the flight into Egypt. And so another Christmas card you sometimes see is of this painting by Fra Bartolomeo, Rest on the Flight into Egypt. And but it's just a tradition. It's not sort of mentioned in the scriptures as a particular thing. And Egypt was a logical place to find refuge because it was outside the dominion of King Herod, Herod the Great, that is. And actually, throughout Egypt, you'll find the various Coptic churches which are associated with the rest on the flight to Egypt and various things that happen within Egypt by tradition. So this church, Saints Sergius and Bacchus Church in Egypt, traditionally where they rested at the end of their journey. And also the Coptic Church has quite a lot of strange to our ears, traditions about, say, palm trees bowing down as the baby Jesus went by. Baby Jesus preventing a dragon attacking the Holy Family and stuff like that. But I'll pass a veil over that. But of course, Mary, Joseph, and Jesus were like many refugees today. And this is one of the refugee camps. I think this is the one in Calais. And refugees today fleeing harm and terror, just like the Holy Family, perhaps different circumstances. But even so, you know, just taking only a few possessions with them, not knowing where they were going exactly, you can almost sort of put your mind into what that must feel like. And here's a kind of illustration, a painting of one of the refugee camps in the winter time. You can just barely imagine what that might be like, people forced to live in refugee or internment camps. And recently the BBC did a report on how refugee children and young people on one of the Greek island internment camps are suffering severe depression and mental health problems and saying, "I just want to die." These are young people and children saying these sorts of things. And so as we see that journey of Jesus, Mary and Joseph, it makes us think about the world we live in, where the refugee crisis is still ongoing and still a major problem around the world. And I was actually, when I was a teenager, I was technically homeless for a while, for reasons I won't go into. But for me, it was no big deal. You know, we managed to find temporary accommodation to live in for a few months. But you did feel, even then, I just felt a bit on the margins and didn't have a home to live in, and was just living in these apartments down in Devon, where I was at the time. And then we see men and women coming to the winter night shelter. All they've got are the clothes they're standing up in and maybe a suitcase. It's really hard for us to imagine what that could be like unless it's actually happened to you. Well, after a while, as we know, the Holy Family returned from Egypt back to first Bethlehem, or they intended to go to Bethlehem, because, as the text states, Herod the Great had died. That's thought to be in about 4 BC. It's important to realize Jesus' birth wasn't exactly on 0 or 1 BC, or AD, I mean. So it's probably about 4 BC when Herod the Great died, and so they thought it would be safe to go back. But actually, they're warned in a dream, because a new Herod, called Herod Archelaus, who was in that gospel reading that AC read, he was also a violent and aggressive king. And they instead went to Nazareth in Galilee, another 60-mile journey up from Bethlehem, as I said. And Galilee was ruled by a much nicer Herod. So there are different Herods, you know, it's a bit complicated. But this other Herod, called Herod Antipas, was a much better king and more tolerant. And there is evidence that Galilee became a refuge for those who were fleeing from Bethlehem and Jerusalem, which was under the rule of Herod, the nasty Herod, or one of them, Herod Archelaus. Well, it's a very difficult passage for the last Sunday of the year. It's not very cheerful, is it? But, you know, it's something we need to consider, what happened to Jesus, Joseph and Mary. And so I pinched an idea from Dom over there as we were talking about today's service last Sunday, and Dom mentioned to me that the Coventry Carol, which is a very sweet, lovely carol, is a lamentation that speaks about the mothers who lost children in Bethlehem at the hands of Herod the Great, in this very passage we're looking at today. So just for a change, I thought we would do something different, to play this beautiful carol, if it's loud enough, I hope, and I'll put the words that are up there. And it does, in fact, mention the evil that was committed by Herod in order to try and rid the world of his supposed competitor, Jesus. Now, I've chosen a version sung by a folk singer called Maddie Pryor, rather than the soaring choirs of King's College, because this carol was originally a folk song, and it was part of a 16th century mystery play in Coventry, as the name suggests. It was one of the songs that they had during the mystery play, and so it would have been sung as a folk song. So, Mimi, if you could just turn the volume up, I just hope this works enough. I'm always a bit anxious about these things. So there we are. It's Maddie Pryor and the Carnival Band. So, obviously, with this passage today, we face the problem of evil, you know, the murdering of the children in this case, but it's the same all down the ages. Evil happens, bad things happen to good people, and suffering seems to be senseless and random. To me, it's striking how many modern novels and comics and films center on this whole issue, the problem of good and evil. You just have to look at things like Superman, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Narnia, the Avengers series, and so on. And in all of them, there's this great sense of conflict between that which is evil and that which is good. And of course, the Bible tells us how through Jesus, God has triumphed over evil and death. In that Hebrews passage that Marie read, we heard earlier, through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by the fear of death. But we live in a world where evil exists and evil acts occur, and we're not exempt as Christians from experiencing bad things. We read and hear about it every day as well. And in Luke 17, Jesus said to his disciples, "Occasions for stumbling are bound to come, but woe to anyone by whom they come." And I'm sure if we really sat down and thought about it, these biblical accounts, like the murder of innocent children, they do trouble us. Could not God have done something to prevent it? Could he have not prevented the Holocaust or the murders we read about almost every day in our in the media? And a lot of Christians feel that God intervenes frequently to change human history. But we're not just puppets in a cosmic game of good and evil. We live in a physical and in some ways violent world and universe, and we live among men, women, and children who have free will to do what they want, good or evil, or sometimes things in a grey area, or even both. But Jesus came to bring about what's necessary for the overcoming of evil, and it's through his power that we overcome that which is wrong as we pray to God to ask for his Spirit to move our hearts and the hearts of other people for good and not for evil. So as we come to the end of this year and enter a new year and a new decade, we perhaps could think about what we can do as individuals and as a church to fight for justice and love and to minimize the evils that some will perpetrate and support those who suffer. Most of all, we can bring the good news of Christ to those around us, the good news of the gospel, because it does, you know, our belief, our sense of God, our sense of Christ in our lives makes a huge difference to our kind of inner moral compass and our sense of what is right and wrong and what should be done in the world to make it a better place. And we can think too about how we can promote the Christian message of love and forgiveness and tolerance. And I think it's very important for us to tell others how God has changed our lives for the better, not in an arrogant way that we're better than you, but in a way that shows people having God's love within us, having that relationship with him through Christ, is a good thing for our lives. Well, I thought to finish with, as it's been rather a heavy sermon today, rather a heavy passage, despite our sense of joy at Christmas and our sense that God has done something about that which is evil, I've got another carol from Maddie Pryor. I'll just pray a first couple of verses. And it's Angels from the Realms of Glory. And there's a lovely sense of that carol, that in the midst of the darkness, we find light and joy in Christ, as proclaimed by the angels. It is a bit jolly, so let me just play a bit now.